You're listening to Right Where You Are, hosted by New York Times bestselling author, creator, and speaker, Jason Wright. With inspiring guest interviews and Jason's unique lens on life, this is the place to see the good in the world, to lift and be lifted, no matter your starting point, to make a difference that matters. And we'll do it all together, right where you are.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to Right Where You Are. This is Jason Wright. As always, I am so glad that you're here. Let's start with a quick question. Have you, yes, I'm talking to you, have you pre-ordered my new novel, Even the Dog Knows, yet? We're just less than 2 months from the release, and pre-orders are just so important to a book launch. So if you wouldn't mind considering that little favor for me today, if you haven't yet, I'd be thankful, and watch for some really unique event opportunities coming soon tied to the book launch. I can't say much yet, but I promise there will be a way for you to participate in just a very unique way in the launch without necessarily having to leave your own home. So stay tuned for that. All right. I know that I have said sometimes that I know my guests on the show in advance. Some I have known for my entire life. Some I've known for decades. Some I've known professionally, at least for some years. And occasionally I haven't met them or talked to them before the show. And in that sense, I get to know my guests with you. And that is definitely the case today. My first conversation with today's guest was just about half an hour ago on the phone as we just sort of tied up some logistics. And then here on this Zoom interview, just a few moments before we hit record. So I am really excited to get to know in a deeper way someone whose name has been recommended to me more than once as someone that you, my wonderful audience, would enjoy hearing from today. Our guest is the author of Eve and Adam. And no, I'm not saying that wrong. Eve and Adam, Discovering the Beautiful Balance. Our guest loves deep discussions with all folks, I'm sure, but in particular with faithful women of all ages who are trying to find joy amid life's thorny patches. I love this in her bio. Her perfect day is playing with her grandbabies, exploring the beach, digging into a new book, maybe even the dog knows, for example, and eating lots of treats. She likes frosting, which makes her a friend of mine. Because if you don't like frosting, you shouldn't be listening to the show. Her name, my friends, is Melinda Brown. She tells me that her friend's friends call her Mindy. So I am calling her Mindy from now on. Welcome, Mindy.
Awesome. Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm happy you're here and that you're flexible. You are so flexible to be able to fit into this sort of unexpected little spot. The way this all worked out, I just think is sort of meant to be. So we're going to do something a little bit different. I haven't started off an episode quite like this before, but I think it'll be fun. Are you game?
Sure, you bet.
Perfect. All right. So imagine, Mindy, if you will, we are at a dinner. We're at a publishing dinner or something. We're seated at the same table with our spouses, and I lean over and I ask you a few questions because I simply don't know anything about you yet. But your answers, because of the setting, at least early on, have to come really, really quickly. And again, I've literally never done this. So let's see where this goes. My name's Jason. What's your name again?
Mindy. Melinda Brown. You can call me Mindy.
Awesome, Mindy. Is this your husband next to you? Or?
Yes. Yeah, this is my husband, Doug.
Doug. Awesome. Where do you live?
We live in Provo, Utah.
Oh, cool. You're from Provo?
No, I didn't grow up here. Grew up in California and the East Coast in Boston.
Oh, moved Boston.
Back and forth a bit.
Oh,
we
I love Boston.
All over the place.
Someday, let me tell you a funny story about my family, a vacation that took us through Boston, and me paying for tickets I didn't need to pay for. It's a funny, funny, funny story. My family mocks me about it today. So we're at the same dinner. I assume you're a writer, you're an author, speaker, et cetera?
Yes, I am. Yep, that's correct. Yep.
So tell me about your last book. What was it called?
So it's called Eve and Adam, Discovering the Beautiful Balance.
You got that backward. No, you got, no. Did you get that wrong?
No, I didn't actually. It is Eve and Adam. Yes, I love the title.
Yeah, should I be buying this? Or is this sounds like a book that's probably not for men, or is it?
Actually, it is. It's for everyone. I would love you to take a copy if you'd like one. I am really interested in delving into and exploring the beautiful interdependent nature of male and female relationships between men and women. And I think that Eve and Adam are a great example of that for us in lots of ways. And the fact that that title catches in your ear and sounds funny is possibly evidence that we don't always see them as really a balanced, interdependent couple. And so right off the bat, if you stop and think about that title, I've made a difference and I'm glad for that. If yeah, you open the book, I think you'll like even more. So
that's brilliant. I mean, I have to say, as someone who's written a few books, that is a brilliant, brilliant title. I love it. If the point, those of you that are listening that are writers yourselves or aspiring writers, there is so much that goes into getting a title right, whether it's fiction or nonfiction. Right. And boy, did you nail that. I haven't read the book. I haven't even held a book in my hand, but I feel
I'll have to get you one.
I'm intrigued. So, all right. Well, I know that the main course is going to be here in a minute. So you don't have a whole lot of time on this one, but I just have to ask you, I mean, it was Eve's fault, right? Wasn't it Eve's fault?
Actually, I think Eve made a great choice. I think it's all about embracing the learning laboratory of life. Mm. And I'm glad I'm here having these adventures. I'm learning a lot from it. And I think evidence shows we all learn a lot from it, that we can find good in it. So I personally honor Eve for that brave choice. I think she was very brave and Adam was brave to go with her and join in. I think they were a very loving couple from the get-go. So they're great examples to me.
Yeah, well, I agree, certainly. And I do come from a place of faith. Obviously, you do as well. And I guess most of your readers are probably coming from a place of faith. But I don't know if you know, but the guy sitting across the table from us, he and I were actually chatting outside before the dinner began. He's an atheist, doesn't really have any faith background or beliefs at all. Would he find something interesting in the book or in the lessons that we learn from Adam and Eve?
I think he would. And the thing that's fascinating is there's no doubt this fellow across the table from us knows about this story. He knows all the great main talking points of Eve and Adam's story and has probably even thought about them a little bit. Even those who look at it as an origin myth, however it has impacted your life, I guarantee you it's impacted your life. It has been very influential throughout history. So it's a fascinating story to look a little closer at. So yeah, I think he'd enjoy it too.
So maybe, you know, that is him and he does view it as just a, you know, a nice story, just like, you know, the parting of the Red Sea or the feeding with the fish, whatever it might be. What could he or back to the show, someone listening right now that maybe they've had some religious background, but are going through some kind of a faith crisis or journey of their own right now, whatever that might look like. And they're wondering, is there a lesson to be pulled for me? What's the quick lesson? What do you tell somebody who says, I don't need your testimony. I just want to know to this interesting story of this, what did you call it? An origin myth, Yeah. I've not heard it put that way. What do they take away from this from you?
Well, I think you could see it as really a beautiful evidence of the value of agency, of our getting to choose what our lives look like through experimenting, through comparisons, through options that we examine, through different tensions. Life is so full of paradoxes, whether you are a spiritual type person or a religious person or not, you can recognize that there are paradoxes all around us in life where we're often presented with difficult choices between either two great options where we can only choose one or two lousy options where we can only choose one or a good and a bad one that maybe both have their appeal for differing reasons. And to me, the ability to get to think that through and really process and decide for ourselves what we'd like that to look like is well, God-given for one thing, but also really profoundly important and impactful. I mean, here we are in January. Everybody's figuring out, do we have goals this new year that we're launching into, or have we picked a favorite word that we want to inspire us? The fact that we get to make those decisions and shape at least a portion, and granted, not everyone sadly is able to shape all the facets of their life, but we do get to shape a lot of it. And I think that is what their story to me is really about, is embracing the options and how we get to shape it ourselves. And in my opinion, the more we collaborate with divinity as we do that, the more effective we can be. But there's something for everybody to take away from their story.
Collaborate with divinity is a great turn of phrase. I love that.
Thanks.
That's delicious. I love that. Let me ask you, again, having a bit of a writing background of my own, sometimes thoughts come before the book, and sometimes it's the book that drives the thoughts, meaning I learn things from what I have written. This passion of yours around this topic in particular, which you've articulated so well, was this years in the making, and then suddenly you woke up and said, I have got to write a manuscript, sell a manuscript, and put a book out there for the world so they can access sort of what I've, you know, been writing in my head for so long? Or is a lot of what you just shared come as a result of writing, promoting, and talking about the book on shows like this?
No, very much more the first option there. Although I will say those thoughts have filled out in the last few years since turning in the manuscript and since it was released in April of 2020. I've definitely added some depth to my feelings about these, but it was a passion project for several years that actually began in a very interesting way, because I never set out to write a book. I certainly never set out to write a faith-based book. I might have considered eventually doing some writing, but it wouldn't have been in that vein whatsoever. But I was in the nonprofit world for many years, working with a lot of different organizations, all of which tended to strive to support and lift women, both locally and internationally. And that's where I really started to recognize some problems with the big picture, of really feeling like, wow, how is women's plight fair? Here we are in, you know, the 21st century. Why in the world are we still having these issues? Not just, things like the Taliban ruling in Afghanistan, but things close to home here in Utah, issues, teenage girls needing to miss school days because they can't get access to menstrual products easily. I mean, that's absurd. This is crazy. And when I really, because of my spirituality and faith background and religious leanings, it felt like, wow, I don't think this was what it was supposed to be like. And why is there this gulf in what maybe was meant to be our experience, or how a deity feels about us? I really believe that God loves me, even though I'm a woman, maybe even especially because I'm a woman, somewhere in there. But, why does it look like this for so many women? And that's really what got me digging. And it was in a couple of years to that digging, trying to figure it out for myself. It really had everything to do with reconciling some chasms I saw for myself. And then it, you know, went this direction. I actually had a quite profound experience with a portrait of Eve that hangs in my office, that I felt really drawn to her image and her story, that it could potentially offer some answers to these questions I was wrestling with, and was stunned when I realized that in fact it did. It offered all the answers I was searching for in various ways. And it's been a game changer for me these last 5 or so years. And it's exciting to see what will come of it in the future as well.
Now, after the book was released, I didn't realize it's been almost 2 years
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Okay. The very first week of COVID lockdown, terrible time.
Yeah, for a book great. Launch, yeah, yeah.
As you could imagine.
Yes, I can. Yeah. Have you had, I suspect I know the answer, but women in particular, women have picked the book up and stopped you in the hallway at church or the doctor's office or Walmart or emailed you or contact you on Instagram or whatever and said, thank you. Thank you for saying what has been in my heart for so long and answering some of my own questions. That has to be true, right?
Yeah. So many hundreds, literally hundreds. I like to say that feedback just because it makes me happy to realize that it made a difference. Right. And, and so many have reached out, but actually interesting the way you started that, not just women, I've gotten some really fascinating emails and text messages from men who have said, I've been trying to convince my wife or my daughter or my friend, whatever, of how valuable she is for years. And she hasn't believed me. And it's not until I forced her to take a close look at what you're saying in this that she's finally now it's starting to click. And I'm so grateful that you found the words to help her begin to recognize just how important she is and how we're meant to work together. Those messages are really, really meaningful to me because I don't think the changes that need making can't happen by women alone. It has to be a joint effort. It has to come by all of us working together. So it's huge to me when men recognize that it's their problem too. It's everyone's problem.
Yeah. They're so well said. If you could wave your magic wand, your magic writer's wand, whatever kind of wand it is, and you could solve a problem, whether it's a problem related to the role of women, the place of women in the Christian world, or just secular, a Washington, D.C. problem, if you will. If you could solve one problem right now on this show and put an end to it, we just wouldn't have to talk about it anymore. What would it be?
That is a tough question, but I think I would have to say if every single girl and woman on this planet truly had the freedom of knowledge and learning and education and access to it, I think that would be the very best way to leverage change the fastest because it empowers them.
And you're not talking about here at home. You're talking about every girl on the planet.
Yeah, everywhere. I mean, there are plenty of girls here at home who have struggles with it. And I love being able to help different scholarship groups or, you know, there are so many great things happening here in the United States for this. And I know there are other places as well. I've talked to some women in Europe about similar things, but, you know, everywhere we need that freedom of learning, knowledge, and education for the women to understand how valuable they are, what an important piece of the world's story they can provide, as well as everybody else who doubts them or belittles them or questions their abilities to see just how amazing they are. So I think the secret is access to education and knowledge that way.
Mindy, what did you learn about yourself through writing the book, through hours and days and months and years on your knees in prayer and in study and probably in bouncing ideas off your husband or your kids or fellow members of your faith? What is one thing that you learned about yourself that maybe you didn't know going in?
I would say I thought that I understood and had faith in my Savior Jesus Christ and the plan of being here, having this experience on earth and what would come next. I thought I got that. I thought I believed it and understood it and was applying it well. And what I really learned was I really could take it to a much higher level. And I associate the word joy as being really Eve's word for me. That's the big thing that she understood and raised was that there could be joy in the journey, even in the thorny patches, like you read in that bio. And I realized every day that I wasn't feeling joy, maybe I wasn't quite embracing what it's all about, and that I could do better and feel happier, even in the hard stuff. And I think overall, the biggest change in me, that if the book was for no one but me, was completely worth it, is that I am a happier person because of this process of figuring these things out for myself and recognizing that I can be happy even in the hard stuff. And even as I've learned so much in the last several years, it's just really exciting to think of, as I gain even more understanding in the future, how much happier I'll be able to be. It's just exciting. It's all about progression.
So there's probably someone listening right now. There is someone listening right now who doesn't know that they're valued, who doesn't, whether they have religious beliefs or not, they might in this very moment, in the very second they're listening to this episode of the show, they're doubting to whom they matter at all. What is your message for that listener in particular, if it's, you know, a young girl or a young adult or a single mom or a married mom like you?
Yeah. Well, heartbreaking. And there are so many who feel that way. And I would want so badly just to put my arms around them and say, oh, you do matter. You matter so much. For one thing, God loves you infinitely. You are their child, and you are special, and you have so much to offer the world. It's just amazing to me how when we pursue that thing that is passionate to us, it just opens doors. When we're following that passion and what we love, it makes us so effective in making a difference, whether it's to one person or a room full of people or a community. They're just really ways to make a difference when you're doing that thing that makes you excited to wake up in the morning, that keeps you up at night because you're trying to problem solve. That is a mind space, a mindset that really allows for brilliant ideas and creativity. For me, it's a flood of creative energy when you're tapping into your passion project like that. So I would tell that person who doesn't feel loved and valued, let's really put our heads together and figure out where your passion lies. Let's try to get you moving in that direction, because you're going to realize you're important in that piece of the big story.
I hope that the right people listening, you know, with the right emotional needs today, really paid attention to that piece and will maybe even revisit it when they have a day that they need to be reminded of their value and their purpose. So your purpose, and speaking of passion, is beyond just this book, as important as it has been a piece of your life and career. Tell us about your nonprofit work. Tell us what you have been drawn to. Talk a little bit more about what you have been doing over the last couple decades of your life to make a difference in the world.
Okay. Well, I got a degree actually in economics from Brigham Young University, and then immediately started to move around the country with my husband, who was in medical training, and he's a physician now. So put some of my pursuits on hold while I took care of our family through those fun years, and then got involved with, like I said, mostly women's issues with nonprofits. One of my favorites, I have a couple that I'll just highlight. Fight the New Drug is one that has really spoken to my heart. They work on pornography education based on science and anecdotal evidence and stories. They do it in a really hope-filled, bright sort of way that makes me really pleased. I think they do great work. And so I love working with them, and they've been kind of a long time project of mine, kind of on the edge of, I haven't been on a board. Well, I was on an advisory board for them, but I just support their core team and do some work at home for them. And then currently I'm working with the Elizabeth Smart Foundation, where I've been for the last couple of years. Likewise, really love their projects. They are working on self-defense for women to help women stand up for themselves physically and emotionally and mentally. And of course, all sorts of survivor resources with Elizabeth at our helm. That's just been an amazing area to be able to work in with her. And then some fun things with Days for Girls, which works internationally, some other smaller organizations along those lines. But all of them have a similar vein in that they try to empower women to help themselves, which I think is really crucial with nonprofit work, to get the power into the hands of the individuals and then let them choose what to do with it.
Give them tools. Tools that they don't even know exist so often, right? They just need to know where they are and how to find him, and then have the choice to whether to use him or not. Let's go back to our friend at dinner as we move here toward the end. I'm curious because he has this question for you.
Okay.
Mindy, fascinating discussion, much better than the breaded chicken that we had at this dinner tonight. So let me ask you this. What would Eve say about the world we're living in 2022, what would Eve say about today?
I think she'd say, things were really hard for me too, but different hard. And you guys can do this. Be brave. Be so brave. Look at the options that really are before you. Choose carefully and wisely. And look beyond yourself. Look to your family, your community, figure out how collectively you can work together effectively to do good and take some steps in the right direction, and then be brave enough to take some risks and sit with the uncertainty and the ambiguity that surrounds you, because it's surrounded me too. It's there for everybody. It's just part of life. And then boldly step forward and do something good. That's what I think she would say. And I think she'd have a big smile on her face as she said it. I think Eve was very happy.
Yeah. Filled with joy, as you said a minute ago. All right. Well, our friend at dinner, he leans in because he actually has one more question. And his wife has now left the table, by the way. She's gone outside for a minute to check on the kids at home, right? Check on the sitter. Mm-hmm. And he says, look, can I just tell you that actually our marriage is not great right now. And something tells me maybe your book, I assume, Mindy, it's not shelved with marriage advice or counseling or therapy or whatever, but I have this feeling maybe there's something I could learn even about my marriage and improving my marriage from your book. Am I reading that wrong, Mindy?
No, I think you're definitely right. And I actually, this was a very personal part of the book for me to recognize and address the issue that I think so many couples feel, where they live parallel lives, but maybe aren't actually a partnership. And that was a profound lesson I learned from my husband. Inadvertently, he didn't realize he was teaching me such an important lesson at this moment. But we were at a point, this is probably 10 years ago, and our kids were getting older and starting to be a little bit more self-sufficient. And I had a little more discretionary time on my hands. I was playing a lot of tennis with all the ladies and leagues and things like that, and doing different things. And we both had really great parallel lives that we were living. And then one day he came home and we were having a conversation about something in the medical field that often happens when younger physicians need a little extra income to pay off some debts and things like that. And so they choose to moonlight. And different practices have different policies about if a younger physician is allowed to moonlight while working for that practice. And a lot of them don't allow that. And maybe on the surface, that seems odd because you think, well, good grief, that's a lot of debt they're carrying. Let him get some extra money. If he's not on call that weekend, or if she's not, then let her go and work in a place nearby that she could, you know, bring in some income for that. And I said, why, what's wrong with that? And he said, well, you know, honey, they're part of a partnership. And if they don't bring the best of themselves to the partnership, then they're cheating all of us. Mm-hmm. And that's not fair. And if they go and they use up their energy or their brain space or whatever, and they come back to the partnership and they're not at the top of their game, that they've used it up elsewhere and they're bringing us second best, well, that's not really helping grow the partnership. And there was a moment, I don't know that he saw the look in my eye. I probably wasn't looking at him as it hit me, but it was an epiphany moment for me because I realized I probably wasn't saving my very best for our partnership. I was maybe leaving it on the tennis court or using it up at lunch with the ladies or giving everything I had to the nonprofits I was engaged with. And I just realized maybe I could still participate in all those things, but juggle them a little bit differently and preserve my best pieces for our partnership. And I would say our marriage has improved significantly since I figured that out. And that was a profound lesson for me. Wow. And I think that's Eve and Adam's type of partnership. Yeah. They're seriously interwoven. They weren't living parallel lives. They were working together. And that's the ideal. That's where the magic happens.
Yeah. I think our friend at dinner is a buyer of yours. I think
hopefully I have a few copies of my book in my bag down here at my chair and I can hand one across to him.
Oh, that's so well, that is just so well said. I love that you're, first of all, I love that your passions and your expertise and your research and your gifts are linked with your faith. We can't separate the two. It's really, really tough, for our faith and our secular lives to not, communicate. And you talked about them being interwoven. I think that's what you are doing so well with this, with these passions is, and I love if someone's listening right now who comes from, either another faith background or no faith background at all, I would love to hear from you on social media or through my website. I would love for you to reach out and tell me, is a discussion like this useful to you? Where I think we're talking to everyone at wherever they are, right? In whatever place they might be relative to faith or not. And so kudos to you. I just applaud you for finding a way in this season of your life, particularly with the book and your speaking engagements and the great work that you're doing on social media. And as a reminder, we'll link on this show page to all of the great things that you're doing out there in the world and how people can find and connect with you. But just what a beautiful job you're doing of linking what you believe on the faith side with what you have found to be true just professionally and through your work and research and writing. So good for you. You're so welcome. We are at the end, and that means our last two questions. Our listeners already know what they are. Of course, the name of the podcast is Right Where You Are. I'd love to know, Melinda, what does the name of this podcast, WRIGHT, mean to someone like you?
Oh, I love it. I love it. And actually, incidentally, my maiden name is Wheelwright, which is on the cover there. So this does feel a little bit personal too. I just think everybody can make a difference right where you are. And one of the interesting things I figured out with the nonprofit work and then shifting into writing this book and you know, speaking about it a lot these last few years is that probably the most effective place for you to put your energy is not on the other side of the planet, but actually right in your backyard. And I think you can leverage your abilities a lot better closer than you can further. And so, you know, maybe it doesn't even require a nonprofit. There are plenty of ways to make a difference right close. And I believe that wholeheartedly. That's my first recommendation for anybody looking into nonprofit work, is look close first, because the options are there. So many opportunities.
I love that. And you don't have to be, it's great to be on the board of directors and to have, time and resources perhaps to help in that way, but you don't have to be to make a difference. You don't even have to be a donor to your favorite nonprofit to make a difference. In fact, I guarantee you, if you pick up the phone today, or you head onto social media today and find a nonprofit near you and say, right off the bat, I can't help financially. That's not the season of my life I am in, but I do have a little bit of time and a really big heart. How can I help? Yeah. I promise you that you'll find all kinds of opportunities to help right where you are. I love that.
Absolutely.
All right, Mindy, look, years from now, when this podcast is nothing but just a memory for most of us, well, you're going to have a really special opportunity to invite people to remember one thing, just the one thing from our discussion today, that you would want people to remember about your life, your journey, your mission, your passion, your book, your family, your nonprofit work. If you could just pick one thing at the end of your life that you would want people to remember, what is it? What's Mindy's one thing?
I hope that I'm remembered with the word joy linked closely to me as well, that I was somebody who exemplified it and facilitated it for those around me, that it's accessible all the time, even during rough patches. It's there if we pursue it and do those things that lead to it. But if we chase after it, it's there, not just in the distant future.
Amen, amen, and amen. Thank you for that. Thank you for just such a fun discussion today. I do feel like our readers, our listeners today have had an opportunity to just sort of eavesdrop on two new friends getting to know one another. And in your case, us exploring a little bit about what makes you tick and just the difference that you're making in the world right where you are. So thank you for that. You're a
thank
gem.
Thank you. Oh, it's been fabulous. Great discussion. Thank you so much.
Yes, let's stay in touch. All right.
Alrighty.
Thank you for joining us on Right Where You Are. For more information about Jason and his projects, visit him online at jasonfwright.com or on social media at facebook.com/JFWBooks or on Instagram at Jason F. Wright. And be sure to subscribe to Right Where You Are wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. This has been a production of Wright Media Productions. Copyright 2021 by Jason F. Wright. All rights reserved.